Welcome to the 253rd episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are an overview of Patrick's weekend predictions, our weekly look at the NBA, and our look at the first two rounds of the men's NCAA basketball tournament. So let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our website, 4thand24.com. And we will start with Patrick's predictions in the NCAA tournament, where he went 1-3. In NBA action over the past weekend, Patrick went 2-2 with his predictions. That means Patrick went a total of 3-5 this week, and it brings his overall total to 1,022 correct picks over 663 incorrect picks. That's an overall record of 60.7% in terms of winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, if anybody knows my bracket and has talked to me recently about it, you know that I had some frustrations picking all the 6-11 and 7-10 games. I believe I don't want to call myself something worse than what I actually was, but I think I got every single pick wrong on the 7-10 line and only got the Oregon game right on the 11-6 line, which is just interesting. And pretty much same thing for the 9-8 line. But we'll talk about the rest of my predictions later, which I did have some good calls in the second round. But Oregon beat South Carolina 87-73. That was the upset I called correctly. Washington State beat Drake 66-61. It was a very close game. This was actually the only close game of any of my predictions. Both teams definitely had a shot to win it at the end. Washington State ended up pulling it out. And then Clemson beat New Mexico 77-56. And Jamal Mashburn and Jalen House combined to shoot, I think, 5-for-25 in this game. Those are the two leading scorers for New Mexico, along with Donovan Dent. So that's not exactly how you want to go out. And then Mashburn entered the transfer portal. Notably, he wasn't playing the last 7 minutes of the game, even though they really needed him to for a comeback because Jalen House fouled out. So they really didn't have any scorers on the floor. So that was an interesting decision there by Coach Pitino, but won't go too much into that. And then number 9 Texas A&M beat number 8 Nebraska 98-83. The only reason A&M had such a good end to the season and had such a good game here was because a 27% three-point shooting team started knocking down 30-40% of their threes, pretty much, actually maybe more in this game. But I got that one wrong as well. And that's how they were able to stay close in the tournament. We'll talk more about them later, I guess, maybe. But then you have the NBA. The Timberwolves beat the Cavaliers 104-91. Got that right. The Pacers beat the Warriors 123-111. I got that one wrong. The Sixers beat the Clippers 121-107 on the road. I got that one wrong. And then the Bucks beat the Thunder 118-93, which I got correct. So overall, an okay week. You know, I just happened to publish the predictions that I got wrong. Obviously, I had many others on many seed lines. I'm glad that I called the 5-12s perfectly correct. I picked Grand Canyon, I picked James Madison. So, you know, I got some things right up and down the bracket. I just didn't happen to post all of them because I wasn't going to post all 32 games. But overall, an okay week. I will do better next week with bigger teams on the board, hopefully.
All right. Well, you can see how Patrick does with his weekend predictions on our next podcast. You can see those predictions, as always, on our website on Thursday. Let's turn our attention now to the NBA. Let's discuss a little more after Patrick's predictions and start, as always, with our most impressive teams of the last week.
Well, number one on the list is going to be a team that's been on here a few weeks in a row now. It is the Houston Rockets. They beat Portland, Utah, Chicago, and Washington. And all of a sudden, after a great few weeks, they might actually be closer to contending for a playoff spot than I initially thought. Every single time I had them on here, I said, look, they're not making the playoffs, but, you know, their fans should be happy with the progress they made towards the end of the year. But all of a sudden, juxtaposed with the Warriors 1-3 week, which I'll definitely talk about later, the Rockets won 9 games in a row. And all of a sudden, they are less than a game behind the Warriors for the final play-in spot, just a half game back. The Warriors at 36-34, the Rockets at 36-35. And if they can keep up anywhere near this level that they're playing at right now, they could actually stop the Warriors from making not only the playoffs, but just a play-in bracket in the first place, which is something that hasn't happened since that year where basically everybody on the Warriors was injured and they ended up with the number 2 pick. But I mean, just a crazy week for the Rockets. Like, this is not a team that's supposed to be fighting for playoff spots, especially with not necessarily their current roster makeup. It's just that this is supposed to be a team that, you know, is maybe coming along in a year or two to be a really strong contender, given that it'll be the end of their vets contracts and the end of the rookies contracts. But the rookies need, not the rookies, but you know, the younger players. But the younger players who are still on their rookie deals do need to get a little bit better for that. And all of a sudden, Jalen Green has kind of made a massive leap towards the end of the year and has become a lot more efficient, putting up really big numbers. And all of a sudden, this team is kind of clicking at the right time. And then speaking of clicking at the right time, the Lakers won 3-0 this week. They beat Indy, they beat Philly, and they beat Atlanta. First two games of the week were won by the Lakers defense. They gave up just 105 to Atlanta and 94 to Philly in wins by 31 and 7 points, respectively. But then even in a game where they didn't play any defense, the Lakers still beat a playoff team. I'm, of course, talking about 2 nights ago where they beat the Pacers 150 to 145 in a, you know, all-star game looking score. But look, it was an important week. You know, the Lakers will take the wins however they get them. They're now 2.5 games ahead of the Warriors. And while they're not totally safe, they're in a decent place for now. It would take the Rockets continuing their, it, not even just playing, you know, 6-3 in the rest of the year. They'd have to carry the win streak throughout the rest of the year, pretty much, to catch the Lakers. And the Lakers would have to play, you know, 500 ball for them to be caught. And then also the Warriors would have to play a pretty good end to the season, 9-3, something like that, if the Lakers were actually going to fall out of the playoffs entirely. So I just don't see that happening anymore. So this week, really good for the Lakers, bad for the Warriors, as I said. Then you have the Mavs. They went 3-0. They beat Utah twice. They beat San Antonio. The Mavs' schedule this week was just not hard, so I won't talk about them too much. However, they do deserve some credit for going 8-2 in their last 10 games, regardless of the opponent's strength, and that's why they're on this list. They're tied with Sacramento, I believe, for the 6th and 7th spots. Sacramento went 4-1 last week, so just keeping even with each other there. But that's an important distinction because one of those teams is going to play the 3 seed in the first round, and the other one is going to be in the play-in bracket. So very, very, very big difference. Then you have the Nuggets, of course, the defending champs, 4-0 this week. They beat Memphis, Portland, New York, and Minnesota. Sure, they're the defending champs, like I said, and played 2 games against 2 of the worst teams in the league. But at the same time, they did take care of business, and they tacked on a win against the Knicks and also the Timberwolves, who they're battling for the number one seed in the West. Good week for Denver, though. As I said, as the 9-1 record in their last 10 games has allowed the Nuggets to claim a 1-game lead over OKC for the one seed in the West with only 10 games left on their schedule. I think OKC might have more. I didn't actually check, but Denver does have only 10 games left. So it's an interesting race up there at the top between Denver, OKC, and Minnesota. But that is a big deal that they did claim that win over another team that is battling for that one seed. Big separation there. If Minnesota had won that game, Minnesota would probably be in the one seed right now, or it would be OKC actually, but one of those teams would be there. So Denver creating some key separation by getting that win over Minnesota.
Okay, now let's turn our attention to the flip side of the coin and the most disappointing teams in the NBA of the last week.
Well, the least impressive teams of the week starts off with the Warriors. They are the least impressive team of the week. They went 1-3, losing to Minnesota, Indy, and New York. They only beat Memphis, which is just, that's never a good week for a playoff team to only beat Memphis. But look, the Warriors are really losing their grip on their playoff spot. They're now closer to the Rockets than they are to the Lakers. And that's a really, really, really bad sign with only 12 games left in the season. Like I said, I already talked about kind of where that playoff positioning lines up earlier, so I won't go into too much detail about it, but I will move on to the Bulls, who went 1-3 last week also. They lost to Washington, Boston, and Houston. They beat Portland, which is pretty much the same thing that the Warriors did. Portland, another one of those really bad teams in the West. But the bright spot of the week is that the Bulls were competitive against playoff teams twice, both against Boston and, well, I guess Houston's not a playoff team, but they're playing like one right now. But then the bad part is they lost both of those games and then also compounded their problems by losing to a horrible Washington team recently. So, you know, 2-2 would have been fine against that schedule, but 1-3 against that schedule is just really unacceptable for a team fighting for a playoff spot still. Then you have the Cavs, who went 2-3 this week. They beat Indy and they beat Charlotte, but then they lost to Miami and then Minnesota and then Miami once again. So yeah, not a good week for them either. But Look, two losses to the Heat, who are fighting for playoff spot, is not a great sign, but they did scrap out an important victory against the Pacers, and 2-3 isn't actually all that bad. Look, I needed two teams in contention to round out this list, because if you do what I do, which is just go on to the NBA website and go to the sortable team stats and add a date filter to it for last week, it's just, I mean, all the 0-for teams, all the teams that didn't win, they're all terrible. Like, we all know that they're bad. And at this point, they're probably racing for, you know, who can get the best lottery odds. So it's not exactly worth mentioning those teams. So I'm just not going to. So that's why the Cavs end up on here at 2-3. It's also why the Sixers end up here at 2-3. They beat Miami and the Clippers for two good wins, but then they lost to Phoenix, the Lakers, and Sacramento. But this is more about them over the course of the season because, look, the Sixers are now in eighth place in the Eastern Conference after floating near the top of the conference for a majority of the season. The attrition of their injuries has really caught up with them, and it's now showing up in the standings in a big way. They have some major work to do in the last few weeks of the season. If they want to make the main playoff bracket, as they trail 7-seed Miami by a half a game and 6-seed Indy by 1.5 games. So a lot of ground for Philly to make up if they want to avoid the play-in bracket. Doesn't seem like they'll be able to do so.
All right, that wraps up our look at professional basketball. Let's turn our attention to college basketball, and let's focus on some questions about the first weekend of action in the men's NCAA basketball tournament. Patrick, what were the best stories of the first and second rounds, or even the play-in?
Well, I don't think there were any great stories in the play-in, I'm going to be honest with you. Two of those games were most of those games were not very entertaining. There was one overtime game, but that was in a 16-seed game, which, you know, doesn't really mean anything. But I will go with the first round upsets and then the high scoring overall. You know, the second round was basically all chalk. It was a 15-1 record by the favorites, according to Vegas. But the first round had eight double-digit seeds advance. You know, teams, you know, we even talked about it. We said Duquesne had no chance of winning their game. They won. It was just a crazy, crazy, crazy combination of upsets. You know, I think the Kentucky loss was actually less surprising to me than it was to most people. But there weren't necessarily, you know, there wasn't a 15 seed that won. There wasn't a 16 seed that won this year, obviously. And none of the 13s, I believe, won. It was just Kentucky losing to Oakland. But at the same time, Yale won as a 13 seed. I corrected myself there. But look, the first round was really entertaining. That's the bottom line. There was an overtime game between Northwestern and FAU. There was a close game to end that night with St. Mary's and Grand Canyon. The Washington State Drake game was a pretty good game. Kansas and Samford created the first controversial moment with the clean block that was called a foul, very Trey Burke-esque. That Oakland-Kentucky game was a really, really good game, along with providing one of the better upsets. And then, you know, there were a lot of teams that made statements by not getting upset. That Arizona and Long Beach State game was close at the half. Arizona came out in the second half on fire. North Carolina didn't really have any trouble dealing with Wagner, but a lot of people were saying, you know, Wagner could maybe slow the game down and present some problems just because of a lack of possessions. That didn't happen at all. And then Gonzaga also did the same thing, a prime upset candidate for some, but not for me. And they ended up playing pretty well. So, you know, there were some teams that avoided the upsets, and, you know, those teams that I said that started out well ended up winning in the second round as well, which is why I bring that up, because you could kind of see that there weren't going to be many upsets in the second round just based on how those teams were playing at the top. But look, I also will give credit because even though some of those teams didn't play well in the second round, there were a lot of very consistent, high-quality mid-majors like James Madison, Yale, to an extent, Oakland. I think Oakland's a little bit less consistent in terms of making the tournament than Yale is, but probably on par regular season-wise with James Madison, who now has huge investment in their athletic department since they've moved to D1 in football. But look, they left their mark on the tournament with their upsets. People will remember those games for a long time. But look, the second thing, like I said, the high scoring, Kansas and Samford was 93-89. I want to say there were five or six other teams that individually had 90. I know North Carolina did. Kansas did in their game. Gonzaga could have if they wanted to. Baylor did. UConn did. And then A&M did, which I think I'm going to mention in a second. But look, that's a lot of 90-point games. Kansas-Samford was 93-89. Alabama-Charleston was 109-96. Colorado-Florida was 102-100. A&M-Nebraska was 98-83. So a lot of scoring in this tournament. And then Purdue, A&M, Houston, and Duke all scored 90-plus on Sunday. So there have been some really high-octane, entertaining games so far, and I hope that that continues into the second weekend. I also think there were – I forget who it was, but there was maybe a story or two of some transfer portal revenge of a team – of a player beating his former team, and I think that's going to become really common in the future. So I'm excited to see that going forward. I mean, you never know if – you never know what might happen with various teams as everybody transfers everywhere at this point, even within their conference. So I think those two, though, definitely the first round upsets and the high scoring were the things that I was paying attention to that made this tournament a little bit more entertaining than just looking at who advanced would indicate.
All right. Well, let's talk about you had some of the best stories, maybe some of the worst stories in terms of biggest disappointments.
Yeah, I think, look, it's been talked about a lot, but the Mountain West easily up there. And then the other thing is I think the SEC should be there because the Mountain West, you know, they have a reputation for not doing well in the tournament. So frankly, what happened this year was par for the course. But if you're looking at the SEC, that conference did so much work all season long claiming how good they were. Their commissioner doesn't want to expand the tournament because supposedly he wants more teams like the bottom ones in his conference, like Mississippi State, who got into the tournament and lost by 18 to Michigan State. He wants those teams getting in instead of teams like Oakland, who beat Kentucky. Oh, wait, that's an SEC team. Or teams like Yale, who beat Auburn. Oh, wait, that's another SEC team. Point being, not only just that Greg Sankey is way off on tournament expansion of what people think would actually, what people actually like watching about the tournament. But look, some of the teams in these conferences did have good showings. San Diego State, and then Tennessee and Bama to an extent. And then I also would like to give credit to A&M. But look, Auburn and New Mexico were awful. I'm going to call out these two teams. Kentucky was bad too, but the difference with Kentucky was that everybody knew the whole season who would watch basketball that that team never played defense in any game. They gave up almost a, I mean, they were playing games where, you know, they would score 100. I think they scored 108 times this year or something like that. But they had almost lost to Vanderbilt because of their defense. They almost lost to Arkansas because they didn't play defense. They did this against every single team all year long. And it was a really, really bad sign going into the tournament because normally you need to be at least somewhat balanced to be a championship contender. The profile is normally a very, very high-powered offense and then at least a top 30-ish defense. This team is in the 100s in defense. They are top five in offense, but 100s in defense. So it came back to bite them. Jack Golke hit 10 three-pointers on them, looked like Steph Curry. And all of a sudden, this team is out of the tournament because at the end of the game, they had young players making mistakes. As we know, they're very mistake-prone because they just have a bunch of freshmen on the court. And that it is what it is. That's how that team was built. But maybe they need to take a look in the mirror and change how their teams in the future are built, especially because I think everybody knows now that with the access of the transfer portal, you can get really, really old, but really, really good players. And the people with experience, the teams with experience will beat the teams that are young. And that's the thing. Oakland was better coached in that game, frankly. And also, I won't say had better players, but their players played better in the right situations. So that was an interesting game there. But then Auburn, getting back to the point, Auburn would have won if they could have just made a free throw. very, very plain and simple. They were playing a physical game against a team that had no business playing in a physical game with them. And that, I think, was best evidenced by the fact that San Diego State played their style of physical defense and a physical game overall. And they just blew Yale out the game after, which is really interesting because everybody thought that Auburn was that big, bruising, physical team that, you know, was on fire heading into the tournament. And that would be them who would roll over Yale and then also beat Auburn, or it also beat San Diego State, excuse me, in the next round, but that obviously didn't happen. And then New Mexico just needed average days from their top scorers, and not only did that not happen, but they also took out one of their best players at the end of the game, like I mentioned. And then look, you toss in Mississippi State coming out completely flat against Michigan State, and then also Nevada's 17-point lead that they choked against Dayton. And I think there's a clear answer to those to that question. Those conferences definitely underperforming expectations. For one of them, very high expectations. For one of them, relatively low expectations. But at the same time, it was supposed to be the Mountain West year to have a good year. And really, only San Diego State, once again, was the team that showed up.
Yeah, and I guess the committee feels vindicated a little bit in terms of how many teams from that conference got in. All right, let's go to the other side of things, and who was the most impressive conference?
It's got to be the ACC for me. There is one more that I will mention later, but look, the only two teams left over who are not chalk or a five seed are Clemson and NC State, who are 6 and 11 seeds, respectively. Virginia, look, Virginia completely embarrassed themselves in the first four. They were awful in that game, but that's exactly what everybody expected. But the rest of the conference has definitely picked up the slack for them. The only other conference you could argue, in my opinion, is the Big East, because they also have all of their tournament teams within the conference still alive. The difference is that the Big East had a 1, a 2, and a 3 seed. So they were all supposed to make it this far, compared to the ACC that had a 1, a 4, a 6, and an 11. So a lot longer odds for the ACC to advance. Obviously, you know, I think the best team, I think the highest seeded team that any of the Big East teams played was Northwestern for UConn. And, you know, I go to Northwestern, as we all know. That team was a shell of itself in the middle of the season, as Coach Hurley said. Northwestern might have been a 5 or a 6 seed if they didn't have any injuries, but the problem is they did have injuries, which is the reason why they were a 9 seed, and frankly, played a little bit worse than that for towards the end of the season. They kind of ran out of steam after the overtime game as well against FAU. Boo Booey had not his best night on a night where Northwestern really needed him. But you know what? He gave a lot to that school, brought 2 appearances to a school that had 1 all time before he got there. So pretty big career for him. I just wanted to give that little shout out. But at the same time, look, the Big East didn't have hard opponents. They didn't play anybody. That's obviously because of all the work they put in the regular season to get such high seeds in the first place. And that's your reward, is that you get to play 10 and 11 seeds in the second round. But at the same time, the ACC deserves a lot more credit. Even though NC State played a 14 seed in the second round, they still played their 6 seed in the first round. And then North Carolina got matched up with Michigan State, which is still a challenging matchup, a little bit harder than most 8-9 matchups would get. And then Duke obviously also played a double-digit seed. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. They played the teams in front of them. Clemson did beat. First of all, Clemson won as an underdog twice this weekend. Again, in the game against New Mexico, they were actually the underdogs in Vegas. And they also, of course, were underdogs against Baylor, but they overcame both of those. So pretty solid showing for the ACC this weekend. They definitely deserve the credit for that. And maybe it's an argument to get Pitt in the tournament. But, you know, I don't think that you can use the individual results of other teams to talk about how more teams in a conference overall should have gotten in. I don't think that just because the Big East had good performances from their top teams means that Seton Hall would have been a first-round upset pick. That's just not how it works. But at the same time, still a good showing by the ACC and the Big East.
Okay, well, we've looked back to the first weekend. Let's take a look forward to the second weekend of the tournament. Let's hear about your picks for the Sweet 16.
Well, I talked about how my first-round picks might have been a little bad, but my second round picks were on point. I picked 13 of the Sweet 16 in my bracket, and all of my picks to advance past that round, aka to the Elite Eight, are still alive. I think some of these teams are more evenly matched up than I initially thought. I think Creighton needs to step up their level this weekend to validate my prediction about them, because I do have them going to the Final Four, even though I think right now they might be the worst of the five teams, or playing the worst out of the five teams in their region. But I'm not changing any of my picks anyway. I still have UConn winning this time. Obviously, it ended up being over San Diego State. I will mention that I did change my pick to Illinois instead of BYU before the brackets locked. I changed it from BYU to Illinois. So in the Iowa State beating Illinois, which is the actual matchup, and then UConn beating in Iowa State, I know that Iowa State Illinois game that was going to be really close. I feel like that is the matchup that everybody's looking for in this round. It is offense versus defense. It is the perfect matchup, the unstoppable force against the immovable object. Going to be really entertaining. Then I have Arizona beating Clemson. I have North Carolina beating Alabama, and I'm still sticking with Arizona beating North Carolina. I think they both looked like they had flaws. They both looked like they had a lot of success at the same time. They both looked like the one and the two seeds. I feel like those teams, if there were any to keep consistent with what I had before, it would be that region. Then I have Houston beating Duke, Marquette winning, of course, with the easier road. And then I have Houston beating Marquette anyway. I don't think that Houston's going to have four players foul out anymore, so I don't think that they're going to overtime with the, injured team anymore. But at the same time, you never know what could happen. But I still have Houston getting there. I think they learned their lesson in that game. And then also I have Purdue beating Gonzaga in the Midwest, then Creighton still beating Tennessee and Creighton beating Purdue. Not very confident with Creighton anymore. I'm not gonna lie. And it's not even just that. I really do think that the winner of the Purdue Gonzaga game is probably going to advance. I see how good Gonzaga is playing right now, and I really do think they have a chance against Purdue because of the big lineup they play. But I also, at the same time, still think that Purdue is the better team, and they still should be able to win that game. So I'm still going to pick Purdue, but I also do think that if Gonzaga came out, I think they would give Creighton trouble, and I also think that Tennessee is going to give Creighton trouble because I think Tennessee played their patented, once every 2 weeks, let's just chuck up threes and miss all the shots game. But they didn't lose this time, which is really important because if you can win when you play your worst, you will probably rebound and start playing better for the rest of for the rest of the year. And that's the scary thing for me. But my teams are all in it, so I'm not going to change it just because. Then I will mention though that I'm feeling very uneasy about that, the Midwest overall. Then I have UConn beating Arizona, Houston beating Creighton. That I'm still confident about. I still do think UConn and Houston is the matchup. I also think it was important that in overtime, Houston's players who were injured that had been out of the rotation as a result of those injuries actually got meaningful minutes in the game, overtime minutes in NCAA tournament games. So maybe, Kevin Sampson can go a little deeper into his bench in the rest of the tournament. And if he does, if need be, and if he doesn't need to, maybe he does by choice anyway. But yes, I still do have UConn beating Houston in the championship game, just like I had before.
So as I mentioned last week, I originally had the same Final Four as Patrick. My gut reaction, but like Patrick, I tweaked it a little bit before the brackets were locked. So in the Elite Eight, in one of my brackets, I have two brackets. Both of them have all Elite Eight alive. But let's go with my primary bracket. I've got UConn over Illinois, Arizona over Alabama, Marquette over Houston, and Creighton over Purdue. Although like Patrick, I am not feeling so good about Creighton. I'm going to stick with that since they're all alive in my Final Four. Is UConn and Creighton in the final with UConn winning it all? There's three teams from my Elite Eight that I like for different reasons. Houston, because as Patrick said, they got past their scare, and that's why they call it survive in advance. So they may have dodged their bullet, and that will pave their path to the finals, at least to the Final Four. I like North Carolina, which I just don't have in any of my Elite Eights. I like the way they're playing, but I'm going to stick with my picks. And then Purdue. I think they're actually playing a lot better than I thought, and I was leery of picking them because they always seem to stumble, except for 1 year recently when they made it to the Final Four. They could break through again, but those are, three teams that are not in either of my perfect Elite Eights. Bottom line is, it's a great Sweet 16. As Patrick mentioned, we have all four of the ones and twos. We've got two of the three seeds, two of the fours, and where you don't have the fours, you have the five, so that's basically the same. And then a six and an 11, and that 11, NC State is rolling since winning the NCAA tournament. So there's fantastic matchups all the way to the Final Four, and no one really has what would be called an easy path or a gimme here. I think it's going to be the best Sweet 16 and Elite Eight in a long time, and I can't wait to watch it and then to recap it. So on that note, that wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, April 2nd, where we will once again look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, have another look at the NBA, actually preview the MLB season, which we said we were going to do today, but we haven't had time due to the great NCAA tournament action we wanted to focus on. And we will look back at what we hope is going to be a fantastic second weekend of the NCAA tournament. And hopefully, if we have time, preview the Final Four, a national championship game. But in the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's additional content, including his picks for next weekend's games that, as we mentioned, will be posted on Thursday, and his MLB Power Rankings, which will make their return for the 2024 season tomorrow. All that content on our website, 4thand24.com. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24.com. Thank you for listening.